Get started because I supposedly have to make up for a lost time. So, thank you all for coming. My name is David Goodwin. I'm the head of Foundation Academy in Boise, now known as the Ambrose School. So that's why you see that on the slide. This session, we just completed, in fact, our grand opening or the ribbon cutting this Monday. So this is fresh information right off the block. We went through this building process, it took us about 5 years. And for this session, we're going to cover a few things. That's right here. Kind of the steps to building are kind of obvious. And what I want to do with this slide is show you that obviously, securing the land, the three blue things here, creating a vision, obtaining financing, and create a team to drive the building process. I think the three things that I thought we would get through in an hour that would be of the most help to you. So I am going to glean over some other stuff. These are the things that I learned through this process. The only qualification I have for doing this is that you just did it. And so I learned something and thought maybe we could share that. So, with that, one thing I'd really like you to consider, this is the one little bit of classical philosophy that I do at this event. In classical education, we're about the pursuit of truth, goodness, and beauty. And I would really encourage you to pursue beauty in all that you do, particularly in your aesthetics of your building, in the aesthetics of the way in which the art, other things that are involved with your school. Some of you, I've mentioned, saw, if you go to our webpage, foundationsacademy.org, on the right side, kind of down, you'll see a kind of, looks, it's a postage stamp size picture of concrete. If you click on it, it's a video of a project we did to color, colored four, five masterpieces and 20 by 30 scope onto our concrete slab when we got it in. We were building this building, it got all the publicity, so you can watch the movie, it's kind of interesting. But really speaking to our communities through the beauty that classical education can offer, that I don't know if this is, if you, I'm sure you've encountered this, I've talked to too many heads of schools that are frustrated with how do we communicate our vision to families. And it's been interesting that I've been trying to communicate vision for a long time. I've been working at this school for about 15 years trying to communicate our vision. I wrote, produced the Discover booklet. Any of you use that or familiar with that? It's a booklet we, I think we got 20 or 30,000 in print now. A lot of different schools around the country use them to promote classical education. It's been very interesting to compare all the effort that I've done trying with words to describe the value of classical education, but to see what happens when we build this facility and people in the community, you know, kind of cars slow down when they go by. Because it's a little different in Boise, Idaho. We don't have many buildings of classical design, and so I get frequent questions even from our contractors about the school. What is it? What are you doing? Why is it this different? I've never built a school like this before. So that's an encouragement to you to really intrude our values of classical Christian education and focus on beauty in what you do. It's kind of interesting to me that if you drive around America, at least in my part of the country, and if you have an eye for architecture, I used to work, as I've said several times here, for HP, and one of my jobs was a European, I worked in Europe for a while. And I remember going to Helsinki for the first time. And Helsinki is an interesting city because it's got a lot of influence from the communist bloc in it. And yet it's got beautiful old architecture. And so you go through the city, and there's these ugly, just block buildings with, you know, that rise up out of the ground. And then there's this beautiful Gothic church set down in the right center town. And in America, ironically, those big buildings in Helsinki, they are apartments. In America, there are schools. It's where we send our kids to these blocks. Now, obviously that's not universally true. But if your school was built after 1950, you're probably that way. And that gives us an opportunity as classical educators to really show what we're about and why we respect the Imago Dei, the image of God, in each of our students by showing that beauty matters. So, that'll move on here. The steps, I'll go through these a little more slowly. What we did is secured land early on. This does not mean buy the land. A lot of times you can auction it. A lot of times you can. What we did, it took us 3 tries to get it, but we worked with developers in the area. Right now, I bet you there are a lot of developers willing to work with you to get rid of some land. We worked with some developers to, at least get the building put into their development as a plan. And then once we had a commitment, we kind of worked forward from that. Create a vision, and then go through about 4 different architectural styles that we went through in this process. Establish a 3-year historical record that supports payments. In our case, I will say that every school needs to consider how much debt you're willing to incur individually. In our case, our board decided because we had a limited lease, our existing lease was going away, because we had done a search for about 4 years trying to find any other suitable facility in the metro area and came up dry just because of the growth in our area, we decided we would take on more debt than, otherwise might be merited. It only cost us about 30% more than our lease was costing us, so, we're still pretty conservative. But depending on your tolerance for debt, you might want to consider that. Debt in the school environment is a little different in my mind than debt in the church environment because, like a business, you serve students. You have to be able to get students in the seats before you can be successful. And like anything else, investment is required for that. And so you can see debt, I think, slightly differently in the school environment. It's more of an investment in your student base. Does not mean you're going to get more students if you build a building. Because when I was going through this process, we worked with a company that does a lot of school financing, and the majority of them did not see tremendous growth after building a building. So I just want to make that caveat. This last one is so attaining financing, the last one, creating a team to drive the building process. I had 2 committees try this and fail before I realized committees don't build buildings. Committees make, policy questions and decisions, but they don't get things done. So a team is a little different than that. I'm going to talk about that today too. Financing without personal security. One of the things that I think frequently comes up, and it depends on the size of your school, but I just wanted to give you guys kind of an idea of when this can occur. Early on when we started this process, we went to a bank to see how much you could borrow, and they said, as much as your board would guarantee. Right? So they wanted personal guarantees from our board. Doesn't usually go over real well, and this is with the board. and so, if you have a track record of 5 to 7 years with 3 years of solid financials, meaning they're able to sustain the payments that you're asking to borrow, and you've got a good 3-year, well documented, and if you came to the budgeting seminars that I did earlier, that's all part of it. You have to be really well situated. That's the first of the requirements. The second is cash or assets. Equivalent to about 20-25% of the project. And I made this number up because every bank will tell you something different, and I thought this was about the average of what we saw. We raised $1.6 million and borrowed $4.5 million. So that gives you an idea of our assets to what we actually had in cash versus what we were able to borrow. A solid building plan which bids to be produced. This is important. Don't go to the bank and say that you want to build this school based on some napkin drawings. Because the bank needs not only to know what you can pay, but what are you going to build. And in order to do that, you need a cost estimate based on construction documents. If you haven't been through this, I did not realize that there was 130 pages of east-sized plots require a built building. I mean, it's, and then a book. So you have to kind of go through that process. It can be a little expensive, so I would warn you, don't do it if you have to do it. But, you know, you'll, sooner than you may think, you need instruction about it. And then an annual budget driven by enrollment that supports the size of the facility, and in the budgeting, I handed out some performance, looking forward, performance is just a financial word for looking forward, and what you expect in the next 5 years, and be prepared for that, to go through that with you. Now I'm going to talk about two different kinds of financing. I'm cruising pretty quick today because of the limited time that we have, so if I don't get everything answered for you, or if I don't cover everything for you, you can borrow money from a bank. Just go in, work it out, usually ends up at, for us, it's about 6.5% borrow money for the building. Or you can bond finance. Now, bond financing is a confusing thing for a lot of people because a lot of churches will issue some kind of security bonds to build their building to the parishioners or something like that. That's not what we're talking about here. Bond financing is a highly specialized form of financing where what I'm going to talk about is a system where you become equivalent to a public school, the way they finance their buildings. You're not government encumbered, but from the risk standpoint, they look at you like you're looking at a public school. Tax exempt, AAA rated safety. Alright? That makes the bond liquid on the market. So that means that your interest rates are very low. And I'll explain that. You have to have a state authority to do it. If you're in the West, that's going to be harder than it is if you're in the East. And I'll explain that. And then obligations to the state are minimal. They're in Colorado, where ours are done, ours are issued to the state of Colorado, the only requirement on us is that we not finance a chapel with the money. That is the only requirement, which is easy to plan to. Doesn't mean we can't have a chapel. And we can spend their money on a chapel. So to give you an idea of interest differences, our interest rate right now on a 10-year guaranteed flat rate is 3.8%. It was about 6.5% to get that through the bank. You can see the interest rate, $171,000 versus $293,000. On your annual budget, that makes a considerable difference. However, look at that setup cost. It costs about $200,000 to initiate bonds. So if you want to go this route, you have to borrow at least $4 million, because otherwise, it doesn't make sense. It's just too much cost. If you're going to borrow less than $4 million, don't bother going to bond financing. this looks a little scary to a lot of people. 20-year fixed versus 7 to 10-year. And I'll talk about that in just a second. So I'll talk about that in just a second. I'm going to explain why this is so low, because I knew when I came into a room full of the type of people who come to a classical education conference, they've got to know why, right? Nothing's free, no such thing as a free run. It's 3.8% versus 6.5. Anybody who's studied finance knows that these are what makes up an interest rate. No matter what you're borrowing, car, house, payroll, plus financing, whatever you're doing, The components are market risk. You know, this is what builds up into the interest rate. Market risk is just what we experienced last year. How much risk is there that the whole market will fall apart, right? Then there's a component for project risk. That means what is your specific school building? What's the risk there that you won't pay? And then there's inflation risk, which is how much is inflation likely to go up over the period of time that you borrow this money? Because, of course, if money becomes worth less, the bank is not getting as much out of it. So if you have a period of high inflation, this So what happens
meal. First off, the market risk doesn't change very much, but the project risk goes down substantially the project risk goes down substantially because how do you get a AAA rating at a little, you know, school in Boise, Idaho? You get a bank back. So we have U.S. Bank backs our bonds, and they say if we won't pay, they will. But because the bank didn't actually have to put up the money, it's a lower risk. So the risk drop. Inflation risk is lower because they run on a shorter term. That worries people, and I'll explain why that's not as worrisome as you might think. And then the profit is substantially lower because the people who are buying these bonds are buying them as safety, kind of safety and security. They're like your money market funds are often invested in these instruments. Okay. Right now they're running 0.53% is actually what the bond holders are getting back from our bond. So I won't go much more into these, except for I want to answer these questions. Three concerns I've heard from the educators on this: state influence. Like I said, it's not big, especially if you go through the state of Colorado, it depends on your own state. You can go through the state of Colorado by joining the CSI. They run this program. That's why we joined them, just for this purpose. Bond risk issue. There's bond risk, you know, because it is a short period bond, but you can buy swaps, which are these things that guarantee your interest rate out of your curve. So we could have guaranteed it out to 20 years if we wanted to, but we didn't want to because the benefit wasn't there. And then complexity. These are very complex, and you need people to help you through this process. And I've got here on the floor, only got 30 of them, so if you want one, come get them. Packets on your way out from the bank that helped us. There's a particular bank in Chicago, one of the biggest in this business, and they can help you. You can get research there. There's even a case study they wrote up on us in there, so you can look at that. So, move on to how to build a $5 million project before $1 million. This is what happened between the first round we did with the committee and the second round, and this is something I wanted to warn you all about. There's institutional building. You know, when it comes to building, there's ways of building buildings that cost a lot of money. Any public institution or something working for some corporate behemoth, the cost of building a building is a lot more expensive. So what we found was, by going to a builder who specializes in a particular kind of, I'll come back to the builder. I'll reset here real quick. I'm going to go through the committee information first. We start out with a committee, and what happens is they kind of chase their tail for a long time. Nobody takes direct ownership of it. So you kind of need that time, one person to give them a deadline. And make sure there's somebody who's passionate, somebody who's competent, and somebody who cares about the school. Because that's when we got to that point about a year and a half ago, the board pulled me out of my administrative duties because we were up against a deadline and we needed the job done, so I did. But if you've got somebody else, board member, somebody like that, who can dedicate a lot of time to it, you just got to push. You got to push all the time because there's nothing nothing like bureaucracy. Bureaucracy slows things down, and building is an exercise of bureaucracy, mostly with your municipalities. I do a lot of one-on-one meetings, don't have big committee meetings, lots of that kind of thing. It's fine if you want to figure out what you're going to do, but once you're in the process, you just need somebody to drive forward and have one-on-one meetings. Yes. Well, I mean, they report to the board. In our case, I just report directly to the board. The authority is really, you have to give them, you have to empower them. Because, for example, I made lots of restrictive decisions on our planning and zoning operations, because if we went to the board with every one of the planning and zoning questions, you know, be it zoned as commercial one or commercial two, you know, all that stuff, that's why you need somebody confident, so you can trust them to just make the right decisions. And the team really, well, we had a commercial real estate guy. Now, you're going to have a lot of people in your school who do real estate. But find somebody who does really good commercial real estate work, because it's an entirely different business. And typical realtors don't dabble in that. It's really complicated. So find that commercial realtor and use their expertise, because they know how to get through the planning and zoning process and, you know, all of that kind of activity. We had an architect. I've seen a lot of schools go around spending a lot of money paying architects for conceptual drawings. We didn't pay $9 for conceptual drawings. Now, the guy who did it was a parent in our school, but I've seen a lot of other architects who will do conceptual drawings for not much money, and they really should, because they make the money when you do the construction drawings. And they own those drawings as conceptuals that they give to you, so they're kind of a block. You're obligated to the one that you use. But what happens is a lot of schools just go find some architect. He doesn't have a classical vision, doesn't really appreciate classical architecture, tries to come up with something, you assume you've got some kind of oddball structure. So you've got to find a good architect. And when you do that, one way to save some money is there's two types of building, ways of building. And this is kind of where we're going into this. There are builders out there who specialize in lease space. In other words, they build a facility and they lease, they're tenant occupied, so they lease everything that's in that space. Those builders have learned how to build inexpensive buildings. And it's not a cheap building, it's not a building that's going to fall down. I'll give you a little example of what I found out when we learned this the hard way. Our architect did all the specifications. Now, our architect, who's one of the parents in our school, happens to design about half the elementary school in our city. So he's a very experienced school designer. And the first round, we got this thing bid, came in at $5 million. And we thought, oh man, we can't afford that. And, you know, so we went back to the architect-builder combination and said, can you take some cost out of it? Sure, we can cut it off right here. Let's just get rid of this part of the building. And after chasing that tail around the dog in there a little bit, a few times, this commercial real estate broker that we were working with said, you need to talk to somebody that's kind of occupied space, because they pay per square foot of lease price. So they know how to keep the price low. So we went, Anthony does that kind of thing. Those builders start and they contract the architect. And usually they either have them on staff or they have the engineers on staff. Because whenever you build a building, you've got an architect and about 5 engineers, or at least we do. And so what they do is, just one little example. This book that they produced on our school building is tiled on the floor in the bathrooms. They had images and specifications half a page long on how to spread the glue on the tile. And I went to the architect, you know, because basically we switched builders, and my builder said, I'm not going to work with this much, these construction sets. I want you to redo these things and give me some more freedom. So I went to our architect and said, now, why do you specify this? Well, when you're working with an architect who specializes in building industrial buildings, nobody wants to be left holding the bag for responsibility, right? So they specified
every detail of that building. I mean, the thickness of the paint on the walls, the how the glue goes on the tiles, what the, it was just insane. Like, and then the specifications of the type of glue you use and what have you. So I asked them why they do that. Well, if you're building a public school building, who, you know, a tile falls off the floor, they sue the architect, right? And not quite literally, but if you have any kind of a problem, the architect is sued. So the architect's covering his tail. If you have a builder who's a good builder with a good reputation that you can trust, you don't need that level of detail. But what happens when you get that level of detail is that your subcontractors, you may have 50 subcontractors who can do tile in your area. Only two of them do spec job tiles like this. Because only two of them have the infrastructure to read and understand those architects' requirements. So now you're down to the two most expensive tile layers in the entire city to do your tile, and it's just not necessary. We did use two commercial subs, electrical and HVAC, because in those areas, and plumbing, I'm sorry, so three, plumbing, electrical, and HVAC, because those are things that have to be done precisely right, but, you know, the tile is going to fall off the walls. These guys, the tile layer, you know, he's a reputable guy, he's done it. And that's part of how we saved that $1 million, was just getting thrown out the book and saying, we're going to take this out of bid to a larger group of people. And so that works pretty well. these are some of the components I recommend. Having a project leader, commercial leader, the builder needs to get in early. And every architect you talk to will say they do design build. Try to these terms, specify versus design build. All the architects will say, sure, I can do a design build, but it really isn't, unless the builder is the one contracting the architect. Because the builder has control over the architect. In our case, we selected a builder who had commercial experience building a light office, with about our size, about our building's 35,000 square feet going to about 64,000 square feet. Our builder, that was his sweet spot. That's what he does. You hire a builder that does bigger stuff thinking, oh, then they'll do it all much better. It'll be all much more expensive because bigger people who do high rises, they're geared for high rises. They're not geared for your kind of school. So that's just, so we just found, number one, a builder who was the right builder for this type of a job. Second, he was a parent at the school. Now, normally I would caution against that. I would still caution against just hiring the first builder in your school that wants to do this. Definitely do not do that. This guy checked out and went through a lot of process, and finally, despite our concerns, decided to go with him, and it worked extremely well because he will bend over backwards because he loves the school and he loves the kids. And he was a very successful builder. He didn't need or want the job. So, even in this one, so you got to find people who are, he did things that no other builder would do, but, you know, without charging us, but you do have to be careful of hiring internal people. I talked about that. Okay, so now I'm going to jump into the architecture side. So I went to this architect and said I wanted a class at the time. Now this was a lot of years ago, because it takes a few years to get these things off the ground. The first one we came up with was this design. This is kind of a federal design. It's similar, I guess, to Perry Christian's. The pictures I've seen anyway, except for some red brick. Stuff was a lot cheaper than my neighbor was, but that was our original design. Now, in our part of the country, this design didn't fly real well with the planning and zoning folks or the developers, because we don't have a single building like this in the city. And, well, we have one obscure one, but basically, nobody really wanted something like this sitting around. So, we went on to another design that I'll show you in a minute. But this is the layout of it, and if you're considering layouts for your school, boxes are cheap, you know, square is the most effective form of square footage, just geometrically. But you can get windows everywhere. So the typical school, you put a gym in the middle, you don't care if you have windows there,
and he'll put classes all around the outside. And I'm going to show you one design that we had done that way. But this design, the wing designs, like a cross, is pretty typical of architecture of the Middle Ages anyways. You know, they did this a lot. And you can have a lot more windows. So this design had a library sitting right in front here. So there's this big portico, and there's a library right in front. You entered inside the library. We had always said as a value for our architect, not making the gym the center of the school, but making the library the center of the school. And you'll see how it worked out when we get into the building we built. But if you share that with us, the value, I'd encourage you. It says something to your parents when you walk into your school, and what they see is, you know, an academic building as opposed to the steel doors of the gym right inside your front door. Then we had a classroom wing. These pods are nice. Mike mentioned your architect, if you're working on this. Expandability is a good thing, especially if you're a smaller school. Be sure that you do the strategic planning that I talked about yesterday and know how big you want to get, and make sure your building can expand to that size. This one was done with pods so that we can build them later at less expense. You know, you didn't have to do it all at once. And then right behind here was a grand room. It was a kind of like an auditorium with a colonnade in it. And behind that was the gym. So the gym was pushed to the back. You can kind of see the front facade of it here. Here's the side facade. The gym was pretty, was set up as a kind of a Greek, this is a Greek revival style. We switched both that federal plan that the very first rendering I showed you and this one are the same floor plan. They were just different renderings of the same school. And this is a side rendering with the gym kind of looking a bit like a architecture or something like that. Any questions on this design? Yes? Square footage of this one, as I recall, without the nodules themselves, nodules on the sides, was just this inner core. Without the gym and the nodules, I think it was about 26,000 square feet. Yeah.
How many classrooms?
Well, in this one, there's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, plus the upstairs. It'll be about 20. And then
oh, yes,
yeah. All of ours were cheap storage because the real estate on this is something you kind of have to consider. I know, depending on part of the country you're in, the real estate may not be as expensive. Our real estate, time we bought this, was valued, we have 8.4 acres, it was valued at $2.4 million. And so at that rate, you don't do a single story building. The elevator is
another. There's
nothing in the voice. That was the way it was. It's boom town now. We irrigated it. It looks nice. He's referring to an earlier session, I joked about that. So this is its original rendering before that other federal firm was put on this. It's called Greek Revival style. It's a little different than the federal in the way they do the various fine points of the architecture is slightly different. Yes? Our school growing when we went into it? We projected about 20 to 30 students. We have 380, we projected about 400 more, so about 20, 30 students incremental. The first year we're in the building, that's what we projected. Was that your question, or was it how much do we build the building to design it to take? Okay. Yeah, we designed it to take 408 students, because that was our strategic plan to max size of the school.
And you were at that point, what was the size of the school
at the time you made that decision?
Yeah.
How about 280? It's a plan that dates back years. This is a simplified design that you might want to consider if you're a smaller school or money is a major issue. It's actually a lot cheaper. This is about $2.2 million. The other one is about $5 million facility, and I'll show you the one we built for $4 million. These numbers are relative to each other. Boise has a low cost construction market because we don't have unions in the state, and so
where you are may be very different from us. You can describe the cost quickly in construction. So this is kind of a simpler design, still has kind of that federal look. And you can see this, it has a library in the center here. And then it just has classrooms around the outside. There's no gym in this design. There's a science lab and the library. It has the same number of classrooms. That's 20. Right. So this one's a pretty economical. It's all stucco. It's pretty cheap to build.
Are you taking into account some land costs on your?
No. That's just construction costs, not land costs. I left that out.
What about the
construction cost, parking lot? That includes all that. The numbers I'm giving include all of that, just not the dirty sitting on. There we go. So this is designed for. We actually like this one better than the architect did it. We had to go back to the drawing board after the developer said he didn't really want a big colonial type building sitting there in the subdivision. And this one is a really cool design because it replicates kind of the Oxford Princeton sort of form, or it at least is inspired by it. In those days, they would, you know, this would have been the first building they built, you know, a real small college, and they would have been added to it, a chapel, and they eventually connected all of these parapet walls. Now, we, of course, built it as one unit, but it kind of looks the part of a Tudor that way. Clock tower on the north end, so this is the north elevation of it. And this is its floor plan. One of the nice things about this floor plan is that it's long. And the offices sit right in the middle between the more extracurricular space, like the performing arts. This is the performing arts slash stage with the secondary gym on it, and there's a gym here. This is kind of not your direct classroom space. The classroom space is all over here. And what it allows, if we're on a fairly busy street in the front, but we have nothing behind us. So all the playground and everything is behind, so that you really separate the kids from any danger of getting run over and that kind of thing. You know, having a long, narrow building like that, as long as you don't design it so that people are running from one end to the other all the time. It works pretty well. So this is our design. This is the front entry here. And then it's two stories, but the library is in fact. Here's the library. So you enter, you see the library directly behind. There's a gathering room here. It's kind of a nice room for parents to gather, conversation, that kind of thing. And then you've got the classrooms with a fine arts room. And science lab, and there's a second science lab up here. Now, what we built excludes this gym and all of this. So when I said this is 35,000 square feet going to 64,000. The 64,000 includes all of this. Right. So we didn't build the gym in the first phase. The foundation was poured for last week, so it's still in process. So.
Did you do a master plan to the planning board, though, for that?
Yeah. Yeah, we did a master plan, but it's rather complicated. When you do that, you do it in separate phases, and then they don't make you create construction drawings and all that for these map phases. And when you get out, it's finished. Construction drawings and then project costs is on 20,000. So they can easily cost a lot more than that, but it's 20,000.
Another big distinction in design.
It's a good question. I didn't put both floor plans on here. The future of the high school kind of occupies from the library in this direction. There's classrooms above this area here. Right now we have high school in this area as well. We don't try and separate them too much because we like the family atmosphere, and we try and integrate a lot of the high school activities in grammar school. So it's not a high priority for us to separate them, but we kind of see here when we get into it. So that's the front of the building, just kind of a shot of it. here it is. So you can recognize this is the north tower here. You can see the two components there. And the day I shot this last week, we didn't have our front doors yet, so they're not on there. This is the entryway. So, see, we did a lot of wood and timber. It's really not as expensive as you might think if you get the right contractors and you watch the cost. You'll kind of notice here the leaded glass. We used leaded glass elements in it to give it that older look. We didn't want it to look ostentatious inside. We wanted it to look more old, so we stained the wood of the tall oak and the tree with a richer color, and then use some of those leaded glass and the wrought iron. The fixtures are out of the wrought iron. You see these elements of wrought iron in it. They kind of help tone it down, keep it from being ostentatious, but at the same time, you know, kind of have a sense of hominess and beauty to it. This is the gathering room. You can kind of see we have put a mural on the wall of the school of Athens, and that's still sort of in construction phase. That's just another shot of up above, and this is looking out the front of that window that you saw on there. We had these made up at an iron forge to transpire. This is down. This is the separation test of the high school and the grammar school. So in the future, this is kind of the area where there's, if you went down this hall here, you'd go into the grammar school wing. And if you come this way, you're in the high school area. And so this is just kind of a big, the top of the stairs, essentially. And then this is at the end of the hallway, and you're standing here to be able to look down the hallway and see this. That's the Last Supper that we put in there. It's another mural that kind of gives the hallway a greater sense of depth.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that codes for all the states require full ADA compliance and sprinklers. And so it's fully sprinkled and an elevator. And
so that's a
good thing to cost an elevator. Well, yeah, it was $179,000, I think, is what it cost, something like that. But when you consider the cost of dirt, it was a lot cheaper than dirt. So. Is there any other questions regarding the elevator or
the lockers?
They're built in. Let's see if I have any pictures of the lockers. I don't. The lockers, the reed needles, they don't stick out. They're facing into the wall. So all you see is just the hallway just continues. You know, you just have to sit in there. Very smart thing to do if you don't want to dust the top of the lockers. If you're just throwing things on the top of lockers or stuffing things under lockers, there's building in the basement. And it really is costing me. It's one of the things in this process. If you are the head of school and you don't take on the building project yourself, you really need to plan to take about 20 or 30% of your time anyway making all of these decisions. Because if you let somebody else make the decisions, it's probably not going to work for your school because they don't think about, you know, what happens. The reason our lockers worked well was because just before we started the building process, I went to another Christian school that just built a building. And their lockers, they were facing the wall, but they had a gap on the top of about this much. I asked why they did it, and it was just a mistake, you know. So now you've got, you know, built-in lockers with a collection area for junk, and most administrators know that that's not a good thing. So you really have to pay attention. It was pretty frustrating. I also have a story that they built their gym, and they built 5 feet too short for regulation play.
Oh.
And their coach walked into the gym and said, "This looks a little lower, it's rougher." They had to go in and cut the steel and weld to raise the gym roof, and it cost a fortune to do. So don't leave those, the administrator, don't just let it go. You gotta make sure, you know, you gotta be involved and make sure that it's gonna turn out the way you want it to. This is our library. This is the second bed. So our students in, I don't know about your schools, in our school, because our high school has relatively few students, and we want them to have as many opportunities as possible, they have electives during the day that all of them aren't in at the same time, so we have study hall, essentially. Rather than putting them in a room, we call them the study hall. This upper deck is the student study hall area that allows about 30 students. And there's a librarian always in there, so they're not under thumb, but they're at least observed. As well as a camera or something like that. And, there's peril all along the walls and the shelving here will go on and on. This is the library looks out on this what looks out to mountains in our area. And then this is you can see the library building. It's in there. 30 hundred tops they still have building. And that's another shot of kids outside the building. We can shot these. are there any questions about building or structures or how to go about doing it again? We managed to build a 35,000 square foot structure for $4 million, saving the $1 million just by selectively working hard with a builder that would work with us. So just be aware of architects who want to manage the whole process themselves.
City water and sewer,
is that taking a while? City water. Yeah, permits on this facility were about 200,000 and 200,000 fees to the, that's all about $4 million, but 200,000 higher fees.
That's new operating
costs? I think there's 35,000 here, something like that, depending on what you're including. Operating costs, meaning including a janitorial, is like 35,000. Yeah. Our the system in this building, one of the advantages, for example, right now the energy codes are such that you have to build these, we're not allowed to have the best bulb in this thing. There's one computer system that turns on all the lights and those things. It wasn't a choice of that. It's just the green stuff that the building codes require. So it dropped the electrical demand substantially. HVAC went down because the air compressor, the heating compressors don't actually come on at the outside temperature. It just cycles outside air through the building. And for the most part, our engineers tell us anyways, it's going to be about twice as efficient as prior building in the ceiling. I'm not sure yet whether that's going to bear out. We've got 14 HVAC units sitting on the roof, so who knows.
Do you service this loan from your tuition?
Yes.
Operating as that?
No, we only had to come up with about $50,000 out of our budget, more than what we were already paying to lease the facilities that we were previously in. Yes.
How was it
with
the politics of getting passed?
Politics internally or with the city?
Externally.
Well, fortunately, the finance commercial real estate guy I told you about, first thing you asked him is, what's his relationship like with the mayor? Our guy had a real good relationship with the mayor, and so things kind of sailed through pretty easily. He made a couple of calls at various points. I'm still working on a problem where they want me to put two trees in the middle of my left baseline on the ball field. But we're hoping to work that out. Yes? Ray, oh, thank you. Yeah, there was a question about that. Our options. Bringing in Korean 500,000. This year was 280, but normally between 300,000 and 500,000. Very unusual bringing that much in option, so I have to kind of preface it with that's the most money that's where we get most of our money in here. And our options are not most of our donated money. Our options are not just options. We do The end of the night involves a slideshow. We have a film producer who happens at St. Jude's or someone who does these. He's the one who did the film of the sidewalk art. So if you watch that, you're going to see his style. He does one of those with the show during the auction in the end, and then we have a little speaker. And then what we do is we auction square feet. So a lot of people come to the auction and maybe I'll spend $1,200, maybe I'll spend $1,500, but they just don't find anything they want. And where a lot of people really don't want, you know, they don't want tax passes for figuring out what the actual value over the auction value is. And a lot of times auction values are set too high. So we've had tremendous success. The vast majority of that money, we get about $80,000 in the live auction, and about all the rest comes in the square foot drive. And what that is we just set the price per square foot, in this case it's $110 per square foot. And we just start at, I think it started $1 million. The reverse auction started $1 million, and it just dim the lights in the room so that it's not terribly conspicuous, although it is somewhat conspicuous, and they just start down $1 million, and anybody willing to give it 5 square footage. So what they're doing is buying an intangible. It's really just a straight donation, but it draws out all that money that was going to be spent at your auction if they have anything they want, but didn't, or if they don't want the tax hassle to do anything with auction. So that has been the most lucrative part of our auction for the last several years. But it has to do with your auctioneer too. We were really, really good auctioneer who was able to, you know, as he brings him down, he kind of creates kind of a sober tone as opposed to usually the live part of our auction is really fun. You know, he's joking with people and making, you know, he's playing around with our audience or with our, we have about 300 people who come. And then he gets, you know, kind of sobers down. It's kind of a structured event that way.
Prior to your building project, what was your fundraising?
About 60 to 80,000 a year. You know, when we had 250 students, it was about 60 to 80 a year. When we had 200, it was about 30 to 50, somewhere in there. So it wasn't very high until. What we did is we had these plans drawn up, and you know, really made the vision concrete. We had renderings of that library and everything. It's been really fascinating to watch because the renderings actually look like the library. It's funny to see something turn into reality, you know, when you're doing this. So it requires a vision. The problem, I think, with fundraising without visioning is that, you know, people aren't excited. You can tell them it's for a building, but unless you show them the building, and if you show them classical, you know, the classical design of the building, it's in the light, like with this.
And just the auction drive, do you have a silent auction, or do you actually have an auctioneer up there?
We have a brief silent auction. We have to keep our live auction 40 minutes, because obviously you throw the square foot auction behind it, you don't want to keep people there till midnight. So we keep the live auction 40 minutes, silent auction for an hour prior to that, so dinner with it, hold it in a athletic conference, probably stadium. Those of you who are football fans.
We just got one thing that we did 3-4 years in advance was really work over the town, because I'm filming this mayor, and bring them into school.
Yeah.
Pointing to, like, you do a passion program, you go by the preppy and comes to special needs. It was really, really critical for us.
And that was a big part of why we did that color on the chalk line thing, the aerial art gallery, as we call it. Was we got the mayor and we got all the legislators in the area, we got, you know, politicians in that community. And then once they know who you are, oh yeah, that was really cool. But you know, every time I walk in Meridian City offices, they say, oh yeah, I know you're doing. Yeah, I mean, you gotta get that kind of work.
They love the same trees. They love the same trees. They brought the local president council, they brought press, did a newspaper article with us on the front lawn, then after calling for the votes.
Yes.
Two questions on the fundraising. On the square footage sale, do you sell that every year? Square footage?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it on more opportunities or gaining opportunities in fundraising?
You know, we offer gaining opportunities in the beginning. It'll vary, I guess, depending on your area. I mean, in the West, you know, I keep talking about the differences, maybe I'm overplaying that, but, the guy who gave two-thirds of the money for, not two-thirds, he gave about 600,000 of our 1.6 million, is a cowboy. And last thing he wants is somebody knowing he's got money, at least in the Idaho style, Texas style cowboy. But the Idaho style, they don't want anybody to know they've got money. So, it's not a big thing for us to decide.
And that's the question I had. The diversity of your donations, do you find that 80% of your donations come from 20%?
Yeah. I mean, of our $500,000 auction, 300 come from big donors and 200 comes from small donors.
How
are you going
to
the
people that
were
invited or actually
comes
to your auction?
I
would
say
these are not
auction. Grandparents, mostly. Yeah, it's mostly grandparents. A lot of grandparents. It's something you have to develop over years, because the thing is, I think a lot of schools do auctions, and when they don't get what they want out of the first year, they change it up or do something different a lot. One of the things about our auction is it's become a social event, an annual kind of a people come because they want to see their friends and other grandparents they haven't seen for a while, and so it kind of develops a cycle of its own.
Are they giving the building funds over 3 years or 5 years? Yeah.
We did a pledge drive, didn't get too much. We got about 80,000 pledges. People didn't want to commit money long term, they just gave them. And I am not a big advocate, personally, of taking pledges and counting those for cash. I think a lot of banks look at that, consider it. I just personally don't like that. Any other questions?
Yeah. Cameras. All over the school.
We have about 10, and mainly it's just because of the chief. I mean, we've got $3,500 in camera equipment.
Purpose, concerns, nothing? No concerns.
You mean in terms of people being concerned?
My eyes popped out when you said cameras in the library, so I
can't. Oh, really? Yeah, and they're all over the building. Almost every educational building I've seen that's been built in the last 5 years has had cameras. A lot of it is security for, people come into the building, for lockdowns and things. You've got to know where people are. There was no real question in my mind or anybody's mind. They aren't they are really disciplined, but I can use them for that if I need to.
If you can even get insurance, your insurance can even give you small breaks because you have cameras. There's a lot of reasons cameras.
Yeah. I had a principal at another school tell me when his mom called up, curious because his son's guitar got stolen at a Christian school and just could not believe it. And so he went to his camera system and they just had installed at the school. And he started, he watched the kid get his guitar out of his locker and head down the stairs and go to a poker machine. Ended up against the poker machine and then leave the building, leave the guitar there. So he went down there, sure enough, there's the guitar. All his parents, here's your guitar. He showed his video and, really humbled the angry parents, I guess. But I think we're out of time.